always good to come back again and again to the fact that we live interdependently with all other living beings. And although we may not live close to many of them, in one way or another, they affect us, like the butterfly flapping its wings in Singapore can affect things over here, but also because we've been related in previous lives many times and received kindness from them many times in previous lives, and will be related to them in many different ways in future lives as well. So there's nowhere in this universe where we can go where we are not in relationship to each and every living being. So while sometimes we may say in anger, I'm cutting off this relationship, actually, we can never end a relationship, we just change it. We're always in relationship to all other beings. So seeing that that's the fact, then good if we care about each other. Good if we expand our mind and when we think of happiness, don't just think of what pleases us, but what pleases others as well. And similarly, when we think of suffering, not just to think about our pains, but the miseries of other living beings as well. And so seeing that we and others are basically the same, wanting happiness, not suffering, and that they've been tremendously kind to us in the past, in the present, and will be in the future, then it's only suitable that we return that kindness, that we open our hearts to other living beings. And so the best way to do this is by aiming to attain full awakening ourselves so that we'll have all the qualities necessary to really influence others in a very positive way. And so with that kind of motivation, we'll listen to the teachings this evening. So this mind that automatically thinks my happiness, my pain, my suffering, my problems, my confusion, my well-being, my future, my career, my family, my job, my social class, my image in front of other people, yeah, my body, my health, my reputation. Gets exhausting, doesn't it? Yeah, gets totally exhausting. My. Yeah. And this kind of focus on ourself, you know, in this way, makes us more miserable because we interpret everything in terms of how it affects me and make a big deal out of everything that affects me. And of course, much smaller deals out of things that affect other people. Yeah, so we become very sensitive to everything people say because we interpret it. We're sure that it's meant for us. Yeah, especially when they say nasty things. We're sure they're insinuating us. Yeah. Although sometimes when they say nice things, then other people are very self-centered and they're sure that the nice things are meant for them. Yeah, and the bad things meant for other people. And then other people are sure the bad things are meant for them and the nice things for other people. So, you know, different varieties, but the outcome is the same. It's all ego-sensitive, every little thing. You know, even have you noticed when you put together a spoonful of food in your bowl, you have to, every mouthful, we have to have the right combination of the different flavors to suit what we feel like tasting at that particular moment. Have you noticed? So sometimes it's like, okay, I'm just having the spoon of the rice. But then other times, the next spoonful, well, I want the rice flavor, but I want some of the dal flavor too. You know? So we carefully craft every spoonful so that it's going to meet our present desire. Because that is of crucial importance to the universe. Yeah, it's very interesting. Try sometime when you're eating. Just eat one dish without mixing it with the others. Try for a week eating without putting any sauces or, you know, tamari or any kind of extra stuff in the food. Yeah, see what your mind does. And no extra salt, no extra pepper, no extra sugar. Yeah, just what's there. Very interesting experiment. Yeah, another experiment. Try saying yes to everybody else's suggestion about how things should be. So take one day, and this is going to be my yes day. And whatever people say, I'm going to say yes. Yeah? You're saying no. You haven't even tried it. Yeah, but it's very interesting, you know? Somebody says, I think, you know, we should line our shoes up in a certain way. And instead of giving your opinion, you just say yes. Wow. Yeah? Do you think democracy is going to fail because you haven't given your opinion on how to line the shoes up? Yeah? Or somebody says, let's do the table cleanup in this way. And you just say, okay. It sounds like we're giving up our independence. What's going to happen? They're going to step all over me if I say yes. Yeah? Your family wants to go out to dinner and they want to have Laotian food. But you feel like eating Thai food, and you don't care that the two countries border each other and the food is almost the same because you want to have Thai food, not Laotian. Yeah? And your family members say, I want to have Laotian food. You just go, yeah. Wow. You know, all these crucially important things that happen every day. And we just say yes. Would you vacuum the floor? Yes. Inside your mind's going, forget you. I don't want to vacuum the floor. I've vacuumed the floor, you know, 5 of the last 15 times, and you vacuumed 10, so it's your turn to do even more. Yeah. And just say, okay, I'll vacuum the floor. Yeah? Have you ever noticed so often in our life, quarrels arise because of the tiniest thing? where the issue is not really what road we take, what choice we make, but the issue is I've got to make myself known. Yeah? I've got to make my preference known. I've got to have some input. And boy, so many problems. I mean, look back in your life. How many fights and quarrels have occurred because of this kind of thing? Yeah. So it's very interesting, you know. Try having a yes day and to say yes. So this fits in very much with the way that we're talking, the section of the Bodhisattva precepts that we're looking at tonight. Now, so we've talked about the ones having to do with generosity, ethical conduct, fortitude, meditative stability, and wisdom. And now we're going to talk about the ethical conduct of benefiting others. And so the things to abandon in order to keep that ethical conduct. And so here I'm not going to just read out of our usual book, but I'm going to use Dukpo Rinpoche's book because he has many more subcategories of things that apply to each of these that I think it's really helpful for us to go into. Because sometimes the more detailed the things, then the more stuff is pointed out to us as, you know, how to practice. Okay, so there's 12 misdeeds contrary to the ethical conduct of helping others. Yeah, so the first group is not accomplishing what is good for others. And so precept 35, okay? In our book here it says not helping those who are in need. Okay? So there's eight different occasions that he lists here for you know, in which we could be asked to go to help somebody and yeah, where we should have a yes day. Okay, so the first one is if somebody is, they're trying to make a decision about something and they don't know how to think clearly about it. Okay, so they have several possibilities. Should I do this? Should I do that? Maybe they're planning a project, maybe they're planning a trip, maybe they're thinking about what they want to study in school, who knows? But there, you know, there's several possibilities and they're deliberating what to do. So here, you know, we should step in and help them. Yeah. So what helping somebody who is deliberating means is it doesn't, I'll tell you first what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean telling them what to do, okay? It means helping them think through the situation. So asking them questions so that they can think about what are the pros of this, what are the cons, you know, what's the result of this going to be, what's the result of that going to be. Okay, so this is very valuable because we really need to teach, you know, help people learn how to think clearly. And we ourselves need to learn how to think clearly. Yeah, if we always turn to other people to make our decisions, then when other people aren't around, we're going to be lost. Okay, so similar with other people, you know, it's really helpful to help them make decisions. Of course, if they're 4 or 5 years old and they don't know how to think very clearly, then you may want to really make the decision for them, you know? But even then, I think with small children, it can be helpful to just get them started to thinking about, you know, ramifications of different choices. Okay? So that's the first of the eight. They're deliberating an action. Then the second one is they're actually making a decision. Yeah, they need to settle a question. And so somebody's thought about it, but they're still vacillating a bit, okay? And so they ask for our assistance in helping them make the decision. So the first, the previous one was we're helping them reflect it, reflect on the conditions. Here we're helping them make a decision. Rinpoche says we may make the, you know, if they ask for our assistance, if necessary, we may make the decision for them. I think we make decisions for other people as seldom as we can. Because if we make the decision for them and for whatever reason the situation doesn't turn out well, then the person is not going to take responsibility. They're going to point the finger at us. Okay? So it's much better, you know, if somebody's really at the point of making the decision, maybe they're just sitting there on the fence, you know, the turkey on the fence when Thanksgiving is approaching. Yeah. So sometimes you just have to say, okay, here's the disadvantages of sitting on the fence. You better make a decision soon. Yeah. Sometimes that's the best you can do. But, at least with adults, as much as possible, make them responsible for their own decisions. Yeah. With younger people, or if somebody really has some kind of handicap, then it may be a different choice. Yeah. Okay. Then the third group of people, you know, to help when help is requested is travelers. Okay. So people who are traveling, who are going from one place to the other. They don't know the way, they don't know the customs, they don't of the place, they don't know the language. Yeah, so we should reach out and help people. If you've ever traveled, you know how much you appreciate when other people show you the direction. It's quite interesting in India, very often, they may not know the direction, but they'll point you somewhere anyway. So don't be like that. Yeah, I've learned in India, if they say it's this way, then I walk a few steps and I ask another person. Yeah. Because sometimes you wind up totally in a different place. Yeah. Some places in the world, when you're a stranger and you ask for help, people will drop what they're doing and they will accompany you to where you're going. Yeah. Americans seldom do that. We usually point people in the direction, yeah. And sometimes we say it so fast they can't remember it. You know, go 2 blocks ahead, turn left, when you know, then at the stop sign, 3 blocks after that, make a right, and then there's a sharp left after that, and you go down, you know. And it's like the person going, whoa. So, sometimes just take a little bit more time, maybe draw a map, write down the street names, even if you don't go to the place with somebody. Okay. And I think when we have friends coming from other countries or from other places who are unfamiliar with how to travel here, you know, to really reach out, make sure we pick them up at the airport instead of just giving them instructions on how to catch the subway. Yeah, I'm even intimidated by the New York subway. Oh, the Hong Kong subway, I rode many times. Singapore subway, that's fine. New York, even though, you know, it's my country, it's like, oh no, New York subways. I've heard too many stories about them. Yeah. So it's nice when people come and greet you and, you know, when you're a traveler so that you feel safe and welcomed. Okay, then the fourth one is somebody who is, you know, has a job to do And, you know, they're undertaking some kind of worthy enterprise, and so they need some help with it. So in this case, you know, if we have the requisite skills, you know, and what they're asking for is advice, we give advice. If we have the skills and they're asking for hands-on help, then we give hands-on help. Okay? So we have to make sure we have the skills and the knowledge to help them, yeah, and then to reach out if they're requesting help. However, if somebody's doing something that is clearly non-virtuous, yeah, they want to make a real good, they're making a drug deal and they're going to make a whole lot of money from it, and they ask for our help, no, we are not getting involved in helping them make a drug deal. Okay? Somebody runs an extermination business, somebody is, you know, making armaments, no, we don't offer advice on help with anything that has to do with harming other living beings. Okay? But everybody else, we can certainly, you know, step in. Okay. This doesn't mean, well, we'll get to some conditions here, but it doesn't mean we take over the whole project. It doesn't mean we leave our life behind and just go and help somebody. You know, it's all the stuff and measured. Then the fifth one is protecting possessions. So somebody who needs help protecting possessions. So if you're traveling in another country, yeah, then the people somebody may ask you to watch their possessions when they go to the bathroom. This applies to like Indian train stations. In the U.S., you can't do that. They prohibit you from looking over somebody else's luggage in case they have a bomb in it or something like that. So in those cases, you have to say no. I remember one time I was flying from Delhi to Tel Aviv, and the Israeli, customs thing in Delhi tore my suitcase apart, asked so many questions, you know. And then finally, you know, they let me on the plane, and I was walking to the plane, you know, or I was going past the check-in. Then the guy behind me said, "Oh, could you carry something on the plane for me?" He was going on the same flight. I said, "They just tore me apart. I'm really sorry. I can't. You know, you have to carry it yourself on." Yeah. So, but in other situations, how we can help people protect their property. So if they ask us for house sit, to look after their luggage, to look after their pets, to, you know, protect their property. Rinpoche here says, he said, this may involve giving financial advice or practical recommendations. We may propose possible ways of investing capital or refer someone to a bank or a financial counselor. I think better to refer them to a financial counselor. I don't think it's for us, you know, to give financial advice on where to invest your money. Again, if it turns out bad, you're going to feel lousy and the other person is going to be really mad. So better they take it to a professional. I with all due respect to Rinpoche, I don't agree with that there. Okay. He gives another example. If you know that somebody keeps a lot of cash in their home, we may suggest that they put it in a bank. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. But in terms of investing money, ooh, yeah. Okay. But, you know, however we can help somebody protect their property in whatever way is needed. Okay. But again, we do this when asked. Yeah. The thing about all these things is some of us are so helpful that we want to run other people's lives and tell them how to do everything, even if they don't want the advice. So that's not what it's talking about here. This is not a right, a license to try and control everybody, okay, and make them do what we want. It's when people are requesting advice, okay? Or if it's quite obvious in a situation that they need some help to step up and help. You know, people don't always need to ask for advice. Sometimes you just jump in and do it. Okay, then the sixth one is reconciling people who are, you know, not in harmony. So again, you know, if two friends are fighting, if you can do something to help them reconcile, you know, be a mediator, be an ear for somebody, and then help that person understand the other person's actions or concerns from a different viewpoint, you know, some way in which you can help people reconcile. Okay. But again, you know, with this kind of thing, you have to suss out the situation. Sometimes people are really mad. They're not ready to reconcile. And if you storm in there and say, but you must, then they're going to get even angrier. Okay, then the seventh one is to help organize commemorations. So this is helping to organize like annual events or events that happen quite regularly. And number eight is helping in festive occasions, which means helping in events that don't happen like regularly, you know, one-off things. So, for example, living here at the Abbey, we have many retreats, many courses. So when somebody says, who would like to be the retreat manager, or we need somebody to cook for such and such a day, we need somebody to pick somebody up in Newport, you know. So when people are asking for help for these kinds of things, you know, we should volunteer. I'm going to repeat this one because I've noticed a trend. You know, in the early days, many people used to volunteer for things. And it seems like now when there's more residents, people don't volunteer as much. So, you know, when there are things that need to be organized and somebody says we need help picking someone up, we need help, you know, preparing the soak or driving somebody or cooking lunch or even publicizing the retreat or cleaning, you know, the shanty cabin or what, these are the things that we should step up and volunteer for. Okay. Now, it doesn't mean that every time you have to be the volunteer. And it doesn't mean if you have something else that's really important to do that you're the volunteer. But it also doesn't mean that you stand there even though you have time and wait for somebody else, who's usually somebody else who does a lot of things and their plate is already very full, and you wait for them to volunteer. Okay, that's not right. Yeah. When we have the time and we have the capability, we should step up to the plate. Okay, so these are eight situations. They happen quite often to us. You know, we encounter these kinds of things in daily life relationships and events. So, but there's a number of exceptions where, you know, we don't have to step in and help. Okay, so what are the exceptions? We're sick. Clearly, if you're sick, it's not, somebody asks you for help, it's not good to step up and help, because you're going to make them help, you're going to make them sick, and you're going to get sicker yourself. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, we've made another appointment well in advance. So somebody asks us to help on a certain day, we already have something to do that day. So, you know, then it's okay to decline. It does not mean that all of a sudden at that moment you think of an appointment that you must have. Okay? That's not what we're talking about. Okay, the third exception is we're presently occupied in very positive and beneficial spiritual practices. So maybe you're in a retreat, you know, you're doing some kind of focused study or writing a book or, you know, making a website or whatever, but it's something, and you're already engaged in something that's constructive and beneficial, then it's okay if you don't say yes. And another thing where it's okay to not volunteer is if we lack the ability, okay? So if we don't know how to do something, don't volunteer to teach somebody how to do it. Yeah? Yeah, some people, you know, it's like they want to help and they're not really sure, you know, how this thing works. But, well, let me look at it, you know. Like, I won't let anybody touch my computer who isn't pretty sure of how things work. Otherwise, well, let's try this, let's try this, let's try. And then pretty soon, you know, your screen's dark. Yeah. Or all of a sudden, everything, you know, goes 90 degrees that way and you can't get it back. Yeah. The cat did that one time. Yeah, stepped on my keyboard, then all of a sudden everything goes like this. I didn't know how to get it to go like this again, you know? Yeah, so I didn't know whether I should put her on the keyboard again. Maybe she'll step on the right key this time. Yeah. Of course it happened when I was in a hurry to get something done, but never mind. Okay, if the activity is harmful and contrary to the Dharma, then we don't take part in it fast. If people who ask us for assistance are actually quite capable of managing on their own, or there are potential other helpers who they haven't asked yet, then it's okay not to volunteer. Okay. So, you know, if people are just like, you know, sometimes people just get in a flurry and, or maybe, you know, they just want to pass the buck and get somebody else to do it, even though they're capable of those kind of situations. It's okay. We don't need to step up. Okay. Also, if for whatever reason, for their spiritual development, it's good if we don't do it, then that's okay. It's not a transgression. If doing something to help somebody is going to upset and irritate many people or give them reason to criticize us, then better, you know, don't get involved. Oh my goodness. I got an email this morning. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, giving me, some people were writing to their teacher a letter of, because the teacher has been misbehaving and listing all this stuff, and the top, you know, they sent the copy of the letter they sent to their teacher to me, and they said, I forget exactly what they said, it was something to the effect of, will you comment on this, or what do you think we should do, and it was like, I'm not going to get involved in this one. Yeah, I don't think I can really say anything helpful at this point. You know, my job after I read this, I felt like I was going to throw up after I read it. But I just, my job is like never to do any of this. That's my job in this situation, but I am not getting involved in this kind of thing. Okay, so then that kind of thing, you know, you don't have to get involved. And then also, you know, to keep our monastic precepts, then it's also okay to decline to do something, you know. So somebody asks for volunteers, you're a nun, and all the volunteers are seven men, and you're going off somewhere else, you know, it's okay if you don't go. Or you're a monk and the other volunteers are seven women and, you know, then, and it just doesn't, it's not a suitable situation, then it's okay. Yeah. Okay, then precept 36 is about not eliminating a particular suffering. So here the precept reads, failing to serve the sick. Yeah, avoiding taking care of the sick. Okay, so this is avoiding, not helping people who are sick, whether we know them or whether we don't know them. Okay, so, if it's a situation, we're walking down the street and somebody's having a seizure, somebody's having a heart attack, whatever, we don't just walk by because they're strangers, we stop and we offer assistance. Yeah. If a friend is sick, and they need help, doing household chores or they need help cooking or whatever, then we step up to the plate and we do that. Or if, they need help exercising, then we help them with their exercise. So, really helping the sick. And I think this also includes visiting people in the hospital. And I've noticed that some people are really, it's like, I don't want to go in a hospital. Because the feeling is, if I go in the hospital, they feel very vulnerable in hospitals. Like, if I go in the hospital, I could get sick. Or just seeing somebody who's very sick reminds them of their own vulnerability to sickness. And that's makes them extremely uncomfortable. So they don't want to go to visit sick relatives. Yeah. So I think it's really good if we have that kind of fear of going in a hospital or, fear of getting sick ourselves, that we do some work on our own mind and really assess, how legit is that fear? Yeah. Am I, like the doctors and nurses are going in there every day and they're okay. Why am I so hesitant to go in there one time? Yeah. Now, if you're somebody who gets sick easily and you have a weak respiratory system and your friend has pneumonia, then maybe, okay, you don't go. But otherwise, to really check sometimes our own fear. Because when somebody's in the hospital, they like support. And it's real helpful if we can go and give support. Even if it's too far away for us to travel, then, call them, send a card, make a tape, something, so that they know that they're cared for. I'd say send flowers, but, cut flowers are not very good for the environment. So, whatever. Send them something else. Chocolate. okay. But, to really reach out and help people who are sick. So here at the Abbey, if somebody's sick, we take them food. Yeah. If they're capable of coming and getting the food, and they're not going to contaminate the whole community, then they can come and get it. Yeah. So this isn't a thing of, I just feel like lying in bed today. So please bring me my breakfast, lunch, and dinner. No. Yeah. One person who wanted to come here and she changed her mind. She told me that she used to live at another spiritual community and sometimes she just needed a day off. And so she would be sick that day. Be sick that day. Yeah. She did it frequently. And then, of course, the people caught on. It was nice that she admitted it. Okay. So here, so again, nursing them, doing what we need. Now, here again, when we're helping people who are sick, we have to be very sensitive. Some people don't tell others that they're sick because they don't want to hear constant suggestions of what kind of treatment they should get. Yeah? So sometimes, you know, somebody has, they're sick, and then this person says, take this medicine, now go to this doctor, no, go to that specialist. Oh, no, I know somebody in Brazil who can give you the, you know, the mud at the bottom of the Amazon River, which is supposed to be really good. And no, use you know, what are they called? Aromatherapy. And then you have this one saying essential oils, and that one saying, you know, oh, cannabis, it's legal now, that'll cure anything. Yeah, and so here's this sick person just being barraged by everybody's suggestions. So often they don't say anything because they just, they want to, you know, they'd like some peace in their lives. So, you know, learning to be sensitive when people are sick and not, you know, giving them tons of advice if they don't want that. Yeah. On the other hand, you find people who are sick, who need advice, who don't want it. Yeah? And that's another difficulty. Yeah, somebody's not taking care of their health. They need to do something to take care of their health, and they don't want to listen to anybody. Yeah. But we don't have that problem here. No, we don't have that problem here. Venerable Sam K, how are you doing today? We had an event a couple of years ago where there were two nuns. I won't mention who they were, but they were very, very sick. And wouldn't listen to anybody. Oh, I'm so glad I can laugh now. Do you remember that, Venerable Jigme? Yeah. Yeah. She and I were consulting with each other, you know. What are we going to do about these people? They're so sick. And they won't listen to anybody. Especially us. Even though eventually they had to do what we wanted, didn't they? But we didn't say, I told you so. No, we didn't. See, that's just you projecting things again. Yeah? We were trying to help you and you thought we were harming you. Oh, see, now we know who it is who did that. Okay. Okay, so here's some other exceptions. Yeah, we're sick ourselves, clearly. We find somebody else to help the sick person who gets along with that person very well. Then it's okay if we don't step in. If we're busy caring for another sick person, yeah, that's an exception. Or if we're not very intelligent, we don't know how to take care of sick people, we don't know what to do, then it's okay not to step in. Okay. If they're already receiving satisfactory assistance, and they have other helpers, then again, we don't need to help. If they're capable of looking after themselves, you know, then fine. Or if they've been ill for a long time and now they're on the road to recovery, so again, they're, you know, able to start doing things on their own, so then we don't need to. It's not a transgression if we don't help. But this does mean that, you know, when we encounter strangers who, you know, something's happening, we should step up and help. It's very interesting. They've done studies, and if nobody else is around, then people tend to step up to the plate and help more. Whereas if there's a lot of people around, then they tend to step back and wait for somebody else to do it. Yeah. And then if nobody else does it, then they think, well, maybe it's not so important, yeah, to help that person. They've done some quite interesting experiments on this. And then, of course, remember that murder of Kitty Genevieve? Do you remember that woman in New York City who somebody stalked her, and I think they raped her, didn't they, or abused her somehow and then killed her? And all these people in the apartments above were listening to her cries for help, and nobody did anything. And that really shook the whole country, you know, when people found out. There were like almost 30 people who heard some kind of, you know, call for help or sounds of distress. And it was New York City, and, you know, they just didn't do anything. So we should not be like that. One time in India, I was coming back from a teaching, and there was a beggar, one old man, who had fainted, you know, who's lying on the ground. He had fainted. And so I and another person went to help him, and the Tibetans around said, no, 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 don't touch him, leave him alone. Yeah? Of which I couldn't make sense. I think they just had the feeling like, you know, beggars are, you know, they're another class of people. We don't go near them. But, you know, we were going to help. We got him some water and, you know, got him so he could stand up again. Okay, precept 37. So this is regards not eliminating suffering in general. Okay, so it reads not alleviating the suffering of others. So the previous one applied specifically to the suffering of people who were sick. So here it's alleviating the suffering of people in general. So people could be suffering from all sorts of things. They could be grieving. They could be, you know, worried about something. So, I mean, people suffer in so many different ways, mental suffering, physical suffering. So if we, you know, we're in a situation where somebody is clearly suffering, you know, then this precept is saying, yeah, you go and you help and you do what you can. Okay. So, yeah, sometimes people may just have a lot of worries and they need somebody to talk to. Sometimes people have had a quarrel with somebody they care about and they feel very upset about it or they feel very sad. Sometimes people are worried about their financial situation for their family. No. So there's any number of different kinds of suffering people could have, mental suffering, physical suffering. So as much as possible, you know, to help. But we need to develop some skill in how to help, yeah, because very often we tend to want to be Mr. or Ms. Fix-It. Okay, you have a problem, I'm, you know, wasn't there some kind of cartoon character who, you know, whenever you had dirt in your kitchen, who would speedy clean it or something. I remember some kind of commercial. Mr. Clean, was that it? Yeah. No, but it was an actual figure. His name was Stronger Than Dirt? Oh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, finally the men get involved in cleaning. Yeah, so Mr. Clean, yeah, or who's stronger than dirt? Yes, right. So, sometimes that's what we want to do. We want to step in, I'm going to give you the solution, you just do it. Yeah. And maybe that's not what the person wants. Maybe what they want is somebody just to listen to them. They just want to be understood. They're not looking for a solution to their problem. They talk like they're looking for a solution, but actually they just want to be heard and understood. So you have to develop a certain kind of sensitivity when people come to you to figure out what exactly it is that they're needing or looking for. Because sometimes they don't say it so obviously because they're not really clear themselves. Yeah. And so sometimes they just want to tell their story and want some reflective listening and some empathy, and they don't want advice. Some people ask for advice and it's clear they don't want it because whatever you say, they say yes, but. Okay. So you've heard me talk about the yes, but people before. Yeah. I have different buttons, that get pushed. Yes, but people push my buttons. It's like, why are you asking me this question if everything I say, you say yes, but? So I have to control getting irritated at these people because they're just, they're not clear. They're not clear about what they themselves need. So they're asking for advice, but they don't really want advice. Maybe what they want is just some empathy. Yeah. Maybe, what they want is somebody to also just tell them to cut it out. You never really know what people are asking for, what they're needing. Sometimes people write me asking for advice, and in the letter itself, they are explaining to me why a certain decision is the best one to make. But they're asking me for advice. What they're actually wanting, I think, is either assurance that that's a good decision or permission from another person to make that decision. Yeah, and that's what they're really wanting. But what they say is, please, can you help me? Okay. So you have to figure out, very often, what is it that a person is really needing? Yeah. Somebody may be suffering from grief, yeah, and you make them a casserole to show that you love them. And as one of my friends said, you already have 10 casseroles. Yeah. Or, you're suffering from grief and people want to help. And, here's a good example. I took a chaplaincy course one time when I was in Seattle. And we, went to the rooms in the hospital to help people. So one couple, they had just miscarried. Yeah, and so the woman was really grieving. And the man said, it's okay, we can have another child. Yeah, he meant well, but that was not the skillful thing to say. That's not what she needed. She was grieving for the child that died. She wasn't thinking about having another one. But he was trying to help. So there's two things here. One is to figure out what actually is a skillful thing to say to somebody in a particular situation. And another thing is when we're the person who's suffering, if someone says the wrong thing, don't hold them against it. Listen to the kind heart in which they are saying it. Yeah. Because often people don't know what to say. You know, your dear one, a family member got killed in a traffic accident. Your friends don't have any idea what to say to help you alleviate your grief. And probably there's nothing anybody can say that will help you. You need to just go through that process. But you're with the people and they feel they need to say something. Yeah. But, you know, what they say in your mind is that, but that's not what I need to hear. Yeah. Don't listen to the words. Listen to the love, to what that is behind the words. Yeah. Don't get irritated at friends because they don't say the right thing when you're grieving. Listen to the love that they're extending towards you. Yeah. I think that is much more healing. Okay. So that was 37. 38, yeah, has to do with not eradicating the causes of suffering. So this one is not showing those who are careless what is suitable, or not explaining what is proper conduct to those who are reckless. Okay, so here's a situation where somebody is about to engage in creating the cause of suffering. So it could be the karmic cause of suffering. The suffering won't happen right away. It'll happen in a future lifetime. Or we can see that right now they're making a real bad decision and they're going to have a big mess in their life. So it could be either of those kinds of things. So the people, you know, they don't know how to make a wise decision. They're on the verge of making an unwise one, okay? So he says when they're on the brink of making a serious mistake or have already made one, it's our responsibility to do our best to point out their error and to give them good advice. Yeah. It's also a very delicate situation. Yeah. If somebody is doing something that is really detrimental, I mean, it sounds so easy here. You know, you just go in and give them good advice. Well, some people, they don't want good advice. They don't want any advice. Yeah, they are dead set on doing what they want. And the more you try and help them, the more they push you away. Okay, and then you get really frustrated because you're trying to help and they're so close-minded they won't listen to anything. And then, you know, all sorts of things happen, okay? So the other person is getting resentful because you're giving advice that they don't want to hear. You're getting frustrated and resentful because they're acting like a dimwit and don't want to hear any good advice. And that, you know, what they're doing is going to adversely influence you too, as well as other people. So it's a very tricky situation. It's not so clear that you just go up and tap them on the shoulder and say, you know, you shouldn't do that. Yeah. I used to walk around Green Lake when I lived in Seattle, and there would be people out there fishing. You know, I would have loved to go up and say, you know, you guys, fishing hurts the fish and they want to live as much as you want to live. Please don't catch fish. Can you imagine what would have happened if I had done that? Yeah, that would not have been the skillful thing to do. People very often come to me when a family, and they ask, a family member has a substance abuse problem. They're going down a slippery slope. I want to help them. What can I do? Yeah. And then they usually say, you know, not just what can I do, but I've tried talking to them about it. I've tried this. I've tried that. You know, nothing is working. So Again, it depends on the situation. What's going on? What advice to give? Let me give you an example. Somebody came to me and said, you know, my sister's in college and my parents are helping to support her, but she's using some of the money to buy drugs. You know, and I know about this, and, you know, what do I do? And she said, you know, I've tried to talk to my sister and everything. She doesn't want to listen. And I said, actually, I think the best thing is for your parents to stop financially supporting her. Because as long as they keep giving her money, she's going to have the means to buy the drugs. And if they didn't support her, she would have to learn to be responsible. Yeah, because it was somebody already in their 20s who, you know, should know how to do certain things. And as she said, you know, my parents, they cannot do that. You know, so you see a situation where the parents love their children so much that they can't do actually what's going to benefit the child. Yeah, because it would benefit the child to stop enabling her to get the drugs. But the parents can't bear the thought of cutting off the financial support, because then maybe she, you know, she'll be unhappy, she won't have enough to eat, da 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 da. Are you getting what I'm saying? You know, how sometimes we don't want to do what's really beneficial for somebody because we're so attached to the person that what we do may cause them a little bit of discomfort, and we don't want to cause them that discomfort. But in not causing them that discomfort, we're letting them slide down the slippery slope. Okay? So having, you know, some sensitivity there, you know, what to tell people, you know, what kind of advice is really going to help. You know, many people come and they say, you know, I've tried everything. And I've, you know, I've told, oh my goodness. You know, I volunteered to put this person in a treatment program. They won't go. Yeah. So then I have to say, you know, what can you do? You can't control them. Yeah. What your job is now is to work with your own mind and the frustration you feel at not being able to help somebody that you care about. Yeah, because if you don't deal with your frustration, you're going to get angry and take it out on them. Plus, you're going to be unhappy yourself. Yeah, and that's hard for people, because it's when we care about somebody, it is always so much easier to see what they need to do to improve their lives than to see what we need to do to improve ours. Yeah? And we offer suggestions and they don't want to hear. Of course, that's not us, are we? We're very receptive to when people give us wise advice. We're very receptive. We never say no, we never say yes, but we never say get out of here. It's always when we're trying to help other people who need the help and they're closed-minded and they don't listen, right? Yeah, it's always that way. Yeah. So, yeah, really to know, you know, and I often wind up saying this to people, you know, that there's some situations, especially in substance abuse kind of situations, from what I learn from the inmates I work with, they tell me that unless you hit rock bottom, you're not going to get off the drugs or alcohol, even if you go to rehab. One guy was telling me, you know, he went to many rehabs. It was great. You know, the judge would send him to rehab so he didn't have to go to prison. He'd do the rehab, then he'd go back and use until he hit bottom. Of course, that was extremely painful for his family. You know, his family loves him. To watch somebody you love hit bottom is difficult. It's really painful. So there's always, what you want to do is rescue the person before they hit bottom. But every time you rescue them, you prevent them from getting to the point where they realize for themselves that they have to change. But it's so difficult. Yeah? So hard watching somebody you care. But really, this is what people have told me who have been in that experience. Yeah? So very often, rescuing people is not helping them. But it's difficult. But then you see, you keep rescuing, and then you develop this whole cycle of, what's it called? You become an enabler. Yeah, it's codependence, and you're the enabler. Yeah, and I've seen situations where you try and talk to the enabler, they can't hear it. They just can't hear it. And you try to talk to the person who has the problem, they also can't hear it. And what can you do? Yeah, you want to help. You see they're suffering. Everybody's suffering. And what can you do? You know, so that's when you do Chenrezig practice and dedicate for them. Because that's the best thing you can do. So it's difficult. Yeah, nobody said helping sentient beings is going to be easy. But I always like to flip situations. So let's us look at situations in which people really with good hearts are trying to give us good advice. And we're the person who says, get away, I don't want to hear it. Or we're the person who wants to keep enabling somebody else. Yeah. So to just step back every once in a while and, you know, look at our own role in situations and see if, you know, perhaps somebody's giving us good advice, but it doesn't fit our self-image. So we reject it, but it's actually good advice. Like telling me I need to get a hearing aid. It's not that I'm hard of hearing, it's that people mumble. They do, and you even agree with me they mumble. So it's not really that I need a hearing aid. That's because you're sitting closer to them. Yeah, if you sat where I sat, you wouldn't be able to understand their mind. Would, I don't think you'd be able to understand. Yeah. What are you saying anyway? What do you think you were telling me? I need a friend. I'm perfectly all right. Okay, where were we? What did you say? Okay, so here there's, okay, we're not on that one. Okay, oh, so there's some exceptions here. Okay, if we do not know what is best for the other person, or if we do, we feel incapable of communicating it properly. We also have to be wary of when we think, I know what's best. Because sometimes we don't. We're just trying to control somebody because what they're doing makes us uncomfortable. And so our advice is actually to control them so that they do what we want them to do and stop bugging us. Or stop doing what makes us anxious. Okay, another exception, we leave the person in the hands of someone else who is better at explaining these matters than we are. Okay, so that's a good thing. So I refer lots of things to Venerable Jigme. You know, yeah, this person cut themselves, go see her, you know. Person has back pain, go see Venerable Tarpa. She's the expert at that. Yeah, you can't work your computer, go see her. Yeah. Go see her. Okay. You need to go somewhere, go see that one. Yeah. Okay. So some other exceptions. The people are perfectly capable and have sufficient knowledge to find the solution or choose the right course of action themselves. So again, you know, they're capable. And sometimes what you need to do there is encourage them so that they have confidence in their own decision. Yeah, so you have to suss it out. If they have qualified spiritual masters or teachers to guide them, then you don't need to step in. If they're going to therapy, you know, you can ask them to discuss the problem with their therapist. Another exception is if they are aggressive and hostile and are likely to misinterpret our suggestion or take it very badly, and they're just going to get angrier, you know, like that. Another thing is people are fundamentally disrespectful and unappreciative, and so they would disregard our advice or react adversely to it, then again, we don't need to give it. Or, you know, they're in a situation of starting down the slippery slope or have just done something and you know they're not going to listen, and they're disrespectful, they're unappreciative, they're hostile, then there's no use. Yeah. So in these kinds of situations, I asked one of my teachers what I should do in these kinds of situations. And he said, keep the door open. Yeah. So somebody can't hear any advice now. Keep the door open. Yeah. Don't yell at them. Don't scream at them. Don't call them names. Yeah. Sometimes you may need to set a very direct line. No, you cannot do this. But let them know that the door is always open if they change. Yeah. So don't make anything final, like, you know, I can't stand you, get out of here, I never want to talk to you again. You know, we say those kind of things when we're angry, but we box ourselves in. Yeah. So, you know, try and leave the door open and just accept that that's where somebody is right now. And you can't get through to them. They're doing their best, you know. Keep the door open, and some other time maybe they will be more receptive and you can say something. Or maybe they'll follow their own way, and then when they get really stuck, then they realize they need some help and they'll come back and ask for help. And at that time you can give it. After you've rubbed it in really strongly that you told them before and they didn't listen because they're dimwits. Okay. No, you don't do that. Okay. Yeah. Number 39. Okay. So 39, not benefiting in return those who have benefited you. Okay. Not repaying the kindness shown to you. Okay, so this is a misdeed when people have shown kindness to us and we are ungrateful and we don't do anything in return. Okay, so it doesn't mean, you know, somebody gave me a present, I have to instantly give them a present. But it's, you know, showing appreciation, showing the connection, acknowledging their gift, acknowledging their kindness, okay, instead of just having an attitude of, well, yeah, I deserve it. You know, I don't need to say thank you. I just deserve it. It comes all the time. Yeah. So especially, you know, here at the Abbey, where we're completely dependent on others, yeah, to not take the food we receive for granted and, you know, be sure to repay the kindness of the people who offer us food. Yeah. Now, technically, like in the Theravada tradition, you're not permitted to say thank you when people give you food, because they feel that if you say thank you, they don't accumulate as much merit. Yeah. So I remember when I was in Thailand, because my habit is to smile at people and to say thank you, I got reprimanded for doing that. Okay, I kept doing it anyway, because that's the way I was trained, you know. But in their situation, no, you don't do that. But in the way we practice here, yes, you say thank you, and you have a sense of appreciation for what others do, instead of just, well, yeah, you know, when's the next food offering coming, or how come they brought this and they didn't bring that, or, you know, they got the kind of apples I don't like, oh, again, you know. Instead of that kind of thing, really learning to have a sense of appreciation for what people do. Tomorrow we're having a work day, so hopefully a lot of people will come up and help us in the garden and in the forest, and to really, you know, appreciate that they're coming to help and that they enjoy helping, and to show our appreciation to them for what they do. Okay, so in all these situations, because so often, you know, I mean, people just do small kindnesses. Even, you know, our mail lady, yeah, there was some point where it was difficult for her to come up the hill, but she still kept coming up the hill to bring packages, yeah, and to show appreciation for that, you know. I mean, I just look at all the FedEx people and UPS people, and, you know, we're out in the middle of nowhere and they drive out here to deliver a package, and, you know, feeling grateful to them as well as feeling grateful to the person who sent us whatever they sent us. And very often, you know, if they order something online, the package arrives and it doesn't say who it's from. It just says, sent from, you know, such and such, you know, what do they call it, storehouse or whatever. We have no way of knowing who offered it to the Abbey, and we want to thank them directly, but we can't because we don't know who it is. Yeah, but still, you know, to dedicate for those people and to not take their kindness for granted, you know, very important that we are careful about that. Okay? Okay, so, you know, to reciprocate kindness, to acknowledge kindness, you know, and sometimes, you know, sometimes we forget to do this with family members. Yeah, we take family members so much for granted that we never say thank you. We never think to chip in and help. Yeah, mom's been cooking dinner, you know, for the last 30 years and washing the dishes. Why should I start helping chop vegetables or wash the dishes now? You know, that's just her role. That's what she does. I'm not going to help. No. Yeah. As I always say, people, when they ask me, well, what can I do to tell my family how wonderful Buddhism is? And I always say, take out the garbage. Yeah? And then just think of it, you know, your mom's there. And it's like, wow, 35 years, I've been trying to get my child to take out the garbage. They go to a Buddhist retreat and they come back and do it. Buddhism is good. Yeah? So, these small things that you never think of doing because your parents are your servants, try just, stepping out of that mold and volunteering to do some kind of small help as a way to repay the tremendous kindness that our parents have shown us. Okay, exceptions. Okay, so an exception where we're not transgressing the precept. If we want to return the kindness, and we try to do so, but it doesn't turn out right. Okay, that's not transgressing the precept. In some cases, it may be more helpful for the person for their spiritual development, if we don't show appreciation or reciprocate their kindness. So, in some situations, like if you know somebody's trying to butter you up and they're trying to get something out of you, they're kind for that reason, and you don't reciprocate anything, that kind of situation. Sometimes there are people who don't want us to be kind to them in return. When we go to Singapore every year, we feel we want to give something to all of our Friends of Srivasti Abbey volunteers in Singapore, and they keep on telling us, please don't bring anything. Yeah, we don't need anything. But we want to give, we need to give. But there are some situations, really, where there's people that they say, please don't give me anything. And then it's really best to accept, respect what they say.
Venerable, you mentioned that if someone donates something, but we'd like to thank them, but they don't say who it's from or something along those lines, does that individual still acquire merit if donating anonymously?
Of course. Donating anonymously, you still acquire a lot of merit. And it actually sometimes is a good prevention if you have the tendency to want to be acknowledged. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, the merit is accrued by the act of giving, not by the person who received saying thank you or whatever.
Could Venerable comment on the joint development of wisdom and compassion in relation to helping others?
You help them out of compassion, and you help them with wisdom, conventional wisdom, learning to suss out situations and figure out what the best way to help is. And then you also combine wisdom of the ultimate by seeing yourself, the person that you're helping, and the action as all being empty of true existence.
So say someone helps you in such and such a way, and you're not thankful at the moment, but later on you experience a form of like deep gratitude. Like, would just having that intention of being thankful mm-hmm. accumulate as much merit as showing the thanks toward the person?
Okay. Yeah, you accumulate merit when you feel thankful, but it's the person who's helping you who's the one who's really accumulating merit. Okay, if you don't feel thankful, it's a transgression. And in the situation that you mentioned, like somebody did something for you at the time, you took it for granted, later on you realize, wow, then go and thank them. Yeah? I remember writing my parents thank you letters when I was in my 20s and 30s. Because and 40s and 50s, because as a kid I just took so many things for granted, and it was only later I began to appreciate what they did.